Blog Talk Radio.
Do you believe that America has become too politically correct? Von Wehhunt speaks truth to power. Do you see the coming of our political and economic demise? Von Wehhunt speaks bluntly about the need to correct America's course quickly. And now, broadcasting from the Eagle's Nest, a man who makes no excuses for putting America first. Here's your host, Von Wehhunt the Barbarian. Octong America, we're always a world at war. And tonight, all across America, it's a dark and stormy night. Many storms are raging from coast to coast. Many areas of the country that were cold or colder. The clouds are out there and the storms and the lightning. Thor's lightning, I may add. Well, while all that's going on in this show, the Von Wehhunt Show, is single-handedly keeping Dr. Evil at bay. Well, it's getting pretty serious over in Russia, isn't it? At the Ukrainian border, there's hundreds of thousands of Soviet troops poised to strike. We'll talk about that in the show tonight. But first, you always put America first. Never forget that. We will never forget the fallen heroes at Pearl Harbor on December 7th. A couple days ago was the 80th anniversary of the Japanese sneak attack, the unprovoked attack, where President Franklin Delano Roosevelt asked Congress to declare war the very next day on December 8th, 1941. It's amazing when you look back in history. Now, there is some evidence that Democrat FDR knew about the surprise Japanese attack, and he wanted to have a blood ritual sacrifice, quote-unquote, at Pearl Harbor to plunge America into the war at the behest of Churchill and even Stalin. And many think and surmise that it was the very early framework of a future New World Order. Let's not forget that FDR was a Mason and in several secret societies that we know of at the time. Some said that FDR may have sacrificed our troops and sailors for a, quote, broader geopolitical agenda. Now tonight, the epic episode 80. Today's star date of 12-9-2021. And our show tonight on Epic Episode 80 is entitled Who Murdered FDR? Now, there's a lot of scuttlebutt from historians that there were Soviet spies inside the White House. So hopefully we'll have the author Stephen Albany call in at the appropriate time and talk about his book. Now, a month ago, if you recall, we talked about the book Who Murdered Elvis? And so hopefully tonight we will get into the facts and details of who murdered FDR. They wanted to murder FDR to carve up Europe and give it to Stalin and the Soviet Union and to usher in communism around the world, and especially all of Eastern Europe, which Churchill famously said that Eastern Europe fell under and behind the Iron Curtain. So yes, these things are real. And to think that there were spies in the White House is highly plausible, given the fact that of what we've seen in this country and all the leaked information. There's a lot of things that go on that nobody knows about. Well, This charade in America with politics, this is what I say. They will continue, and it will continue as long as this game is profitable to continue the illusion. At the point where the illusion becomes too expensive to maintain, they will just take down the scenery. They will pull back the curtains. They will move the tables and chairs out of the way, and you will see the brick wall at the back of the theater. That is the way it is right now. Well, it is the holiday season as well. And we will drink and be merry during this holiday season, correct? Now, after January 1st, if not before, 2022 already, in my view, all bets are off. Either way, real America instinctively knows that, like always, we are on our own. Capiche? And now the bar is always open here in the studio. I may need a shot of Kentucky bourbon or vodka as I contemplate 2022. Stay heavily armed, my friends. This is far, far from over. And with that, I toast all of you from my mountain stronghold and radio studio. Cheers, friend. Cheers to all of you. Now, it's always fun to read some of the comments about the show and emails, and I get postcards and telegrams of the show. A man wrote the show and said this. He said, remember this, folks. Von Wiehunt is right on, and you are exactly right, sir. He said, I've listened to several of your shows, and I just want to tell your audience that, he says, evil witchcraft is real. That fact, he said, is out there, it's evil, and it's eagerly awaiting for anyone to open the door. He said, keep that door shut and locked. Demons are real, and they're working to overthrow America and to destroy all of humanity. Could not agree more. He also writes, they were probably trying to cast a spell on Trump during his presidency. Sorcery and witchcraft and all these things that were bringing into the country. Most people think this is mythical fiction, but their powers are for real. Many of these people prayed for Trump's death by the tens of thousands, but Trump, he said, had Jesus on his side, and it won't work in that case because he is the armor of God. Now, Trump is far from a saint, but even saints can call upon the Lord, correct? Now, I get a lot of interesting comments during the week, and I find some fascinating, some interesting, and they take on a life of their own. And sometimes I think it's good to broadcast them on the air, the ones that are the most interesting. Well, it's also said that my people will be destroyed due to lack of knowledge. Now, if you listen to the show, you will be on the cutting edge. You will have lots of knowledge and conjecture. You're going to hear from real America. If you're new to the show, this is a variety radio show. We're not a single topic show. We're not corporate rhino radio. We talk about a lot of different subjects, a lot of different things. If that's not your cup of tea, you're free to change the dial. But those who want to hear a lot of subjects, a lot of callers, a lot of conjecture, a lot of debate, maybe this is the show for them. So I designed the show as a variety show. We'll play a little music. We'll talk about the politics of the day. And if you're a new caller, you can always be first in line to speak. Now, tonight's going to be very tight on phone calls, because if we get our VIP guest, Stephen Albany, to call in, we will talk for probably an hour to an hour and a half, but we'll see if he calls in. If not, we will go to Plan B. But the people, we the people, we are the government, not they so much in Washington, D.C. You, the individual, you are a sovereign power as set up by our founding fathers. The battle lines in this country right now are racial, they're generational, they're ideological, and they are religious. There's many, many more battle lines in America, many fault lines that we could talk about. I can't wait for us to win back everything they've taken from us. And I'm not just talking about the past 100 years. The new Democrat and Bolshevik empire was built upon a hollow foundation of lies, deception, corruption, immorality, hate, greed, and this division will not stand and it will crumble before our very eyes. On the Flash Intel tonight, title, We Are a World at War. This is what's going on around the world, my friends. Vladimir Putin and Russia are poised to invade Ukraine. Rumor has it in mid of January 2022. What a great way to start off the new year, with a bang and a new European war. It's just what we need or don't need. Unbelievable. Over 200,000 troops are now massing right now on the Ukrainian border. Putin reaches out to military techs in Siberia to bring them to the front lines with their special skill sets. At the same time, China saber rattles and is building up their forces on the coastal towns across the Taiwan Straits in anticipation of a Taiwan invasion. These preparations could take much more time. The Israeli Mossad chief was allegedly spotted in Washington, D.C. last Sunday night by sources on the ground. For what purpose, you may ask? Very interesting. Russian pro-Kremlin TV says that Putin has the capability to turn much of the USA into radioactive ash and dust for their propaganda or truth, however you see it. Don't forget the new hypersonic missiles that America does not have under Biden, who is gutting. Biden's gutting our military every day, and he's softening us up for attack, in my view. Russia's hypersonic missile factories are running 24 hours a day at full capacity. Some naval sources say that the USS Connecticut, if you recall a few weeks back in the South China Sea, when it was damaged, did not hit an underground mountain. That BS, as was told. We have far sophisticated sonar and radar to track that underground or under the ocean waters. But rather, it was rammed by a Chinese communist naval submarine in the South China Sea. It's an act of war. I believe the Chinese communist submarine rammed our vessel while at sea. And that's what my sources say. Going into the Pacific Northwest, the beautiful state of Oregon. I've been there many times, where I like to vacation many times as well. Oregon moves to make indoor mask mandates permanent, but everyone sane in that state of Oregon seriously doubts that the crazy law indoor mandate will be followed. That's interesting because most people, when I go to Oregon, no one's wearing a mask in Oregon. There's a lot more patriots up there than you would think. The hotbed of liberalism is Portland. Stay away from there. It's a dead town. Very dangerous. A lot of Antifa. The town is disintegrating before our eyes. That was once a beautiful part of Oregon. And like all liberal cities, it's like a biblical horde of locusts goes over them. They eat up everything. Then they destroy everything. And then the locusts fly to the next town, and they do the same thing over and over and over again. It's wash your hands, rinse and repeat over and over again in triplicate. That's what they do in Portland. And those people that destroyed that city are going to pack up when it's no longer fun, nothing left to feed off like biblical locusts, and they're going to pick another town in America to feed off of. And then they'll ruin that town, and the process will go on and on and on. Sad but true, that's the world that we live in right now. Now, this has already been reported in many sectors, so I'm not divulging or spilling the beans, so to speak, on what's going on here with the U.S. military. But U.S. soldiers for the 10th Mountain Division are in the Ukraine for NATO and, of course, advising Ukrainian defense officials if they are, in fact, invaded by Russia in the new year and what's going on. So our spies are everywhere. We have people on the ground that feed the show information, good intel, constantly. Now, tonight, I want to quote you from President George H.W. Bush, Bush 1, who famously said this back in the day, if people were to ever find out, he said, what we have done, we would be chased down the streets and lynched. Yeah, that's what he said, which also ties into that infamous funeral he had in Washington, D.C., with all the ex-presidents and their families. Well, I'm so glad you're all here tonight for the show. We've got, it's a big show tonight. And right now it's time for one of our great promos.
The Von Wehunt Show. Conversation and analysis of breaking news, geopolitical events, politics, history, and some fun, too. Von Wehunt is an astute observer of the human condition. Von Wehunt will cut through the political correctness and speak bluntly about the social, political, and economic demise taking place in America and around the world. Von Wehunt is a nationalist who, without shame, puts America first. Von Wehunt, the Barbarian. Thursday at 8 p.m.
That's right. We're on every Thursday night at Ocho 8 Hour, Mountain Standard Time, when we have complete air supremacy and full power over the radio airwaves and the communist forces that are aligned against us on Blog Talk Radio. As the Roman Emperor Marcus Aurelius once said, death smiles at all of us. All a man can do is smile back. You have reached the radio octagon. Love that. Well, as I told you rhetorically in the last show, We didn't vote our way into this mess, so why would anyone think that we can peacefully vote our way out of it someday in the future? Think about it. We hope that cooler heads prevail. We hope that peace reigns in the land, but if you look at the signs, it's not looking that good at times, is it? Well, I would say this, that our government can relentlessly hunt down Americans in Nevada, which one was picked up today and arrested by the FBI for the January 6th melee. They can hunt down Americans. There's a major national hunt going on for all the, quote, perpetrators of the January 6th insurrection, they call it, the insurrection, largely unarmed Americans protesting peacefully, being ushered in to the U.S. Capitol by U.S. Capitol Police, by the way. Now, the FBI is relentlessly hunting down Americans. They found this couple in a trailer in Nevada with their children. They were hiding out when they finally tracked them down. What gets me is that they can relentlessly hunt down Americans, but they cannot find one illegal alien in America. Isn't that fantastic? They can't find one of them. They just shrug their shoulders like dolts and go, no say, we don't know. And that's the way America is. Well, you should know by now where many agencies in our government, where their allegiances really are. And they will just tell you we're just following orders. Haven't we heard that before? Well, that may be true, but at the same time, it just shows, again, that the top of the swamp, the top head, is a multifaceted hydra, snakehead, and full of venom against you, the American people. They hate your guts. They hate all of us. But in my view, many of these people that run these agencies in D.C. are psychopaths. They are very dangerous bureaucrats, to say the least. And they keep pushing, you know, the COVID vaccine. And look at it this way. If I don't get vaccinated, I am 100% protected against the vaccine or its side effects and 99.98% against COVID. That's a very good deal, America. Think about it. Well, the definition of a psychopath, since we're talking about that, is a person who engages repeatedly in criminal and antisocial behavior without remorse or empathy for those victimized. Excuse me. It's a morally irresponsible person. It's a person with a personality disorder indicated by a pattern of lying, cunning, manipulation, glibness. They're exploiting. They love to exploit people. They're arrogant. They have delusions of grandeur, even sexual promiscuity, low self-control, disregard for morality, a lack of acceptance of responsibility, callousness, and a lack of empathy and remorse. Such an individual, it says, that's deemed a psychopath may be especially prone to violent and criminal offenses. Who does that remind you of, a government bureaucrat or Alec Baldwin? I'm not quite sure. But it's just amazing when you look at the news and the headlines. Now, have a very interesting show for you tonight. We're going to get the author on here, Stephen Albany, soon. But there's some new Biden homeless encampments in Oxnard, California that have sprung up on the beach. These are the new Biden camps, and I guess they're going to build back better in America with more homeless encampments. And get this, America. It's worth noting that there is a Democrat BLM street demonstration literally every weekend in Washington, D.C. and other Democrat cities, even after the infamous, quote, January 6th insurrection. By the way, that's another date that will live in infamy. And no one really cares but a group of white men who walked through the Capitol their forefathers built, carrying their battle flags their forefathers fought and died for, and now that makes international headlines. Go figure. That's why I spell America sometimes on Gab and other websites with a K for effect. It was often said that you will lose the country that your forefathers fought for and died for if you let it slip away from you. Now, this group marched in D.C. last Saturday, and they're called the Patriot Front. If you're out there, I'd like someone from the Patriot Front to contact the Von Wiehunt Show. I'd love to talk with them on the air. Let's do this. I put out some focused and some targeted emails out there to people. Let's see if they respond. That would be great. Now, if you want truth, if you want to hear a great show, a little bit of entertainment, some great callers who are very smart, well, I would say you came to the right place. Now, we're going to go back in time a little bit in our time, time machine tonight to the George H.W. Bush funeral a few years back, if you recall, under Trump. Now, Trump inserted envelopes into all the funeral books given to the VIPs like the Clintons, Obamas, and the Bush family, et cetera, and all the ex-presidents. Allegedly, it was Trump who did this. And inside the envelope, there was allegedly a card that was signed by George H.W. Bush before he died, of course, that said, quote, "They know everything. I'm sorry." And the wild rumor is that though he was old, George H.W. Bush was, many people believe that he was, now this is a wild story, but many people still believe that he was executed by a military tribunal for being involved in the death of President John F. Kennedy, among other shady dealings over the years, allegedly, of course. It was known that he was head of the CIA, he was Reagan's VP, and, of course, he became president. Some people surmise that the card could have stated because the shock and horror, if you look at that video on people's faces, was so pronounced. Some people surmise that the card could have said, "I was executed, ... you're next." Who knows? But which is why the shock and horror, you know, that's in those videos on the internet are really telling, because these people look really, really shocked and horrified. Very interesting conjecture. Some might call that conspiracy theory, but a lot of conspiracy theories come true in life. And that's about the gist of it, but who knows? In the radio business, we always say, only the shadow knows. And someday it will come out exactly what was on those cards. Maybe the game is still being played out. Maybe there are things going on between, as they say, the white hats and the black hats. We'll see. That may be all Q and Anonymous and that kind of group going on, but I do find it very interesting that the funeral video was making the rounds on the internet a lot this past week, and it was very telling because Bush and Hillary and the Obamas were very distraught after reading that. And it wasn't long. It did not take them long to read it. It was only one sentence because they barely glanced at it, and the shock and horror came over their faces. Very, very interesting. Well, there's flash news from the Ukrainian war front, of course. We want to save America with our radio show, one listener at a time, one city and town at a time. We're conquering a lot of America, step by step, brick by brick, town by town. But I say, don't expect any politician to save you or to do it all for you either. Because folks have told you time and time again that no one is coming to save us. We are, as usual, on our own. But I also would not have it any other way, because only then will we get the glory we so much deserve. Now, it's widely been reported and speculated that the Chinese communist regime has the goods on the Biden family. We all know they covet America and our great farmland. Their generals openly plan a land invasion in the future. And it's just amazing what's going on there with the communist Chinese. And who knows, wouldn't it be a weird world if Russia invaded the Ukraine, China, which has been saber-rattling for months, invades Taiwan, and North Korea, which is also amassing troops on the South Korean border. Ah, you haven't heard about that, have you? Except on my show. No one's telling you that. But wouldn't it be wild if the Russia invasion of Ukraine, the Chinese invasion of Taiwan, and the North Korean invasion of South Korea all occurred at the same time? They're all communist nations. What would Biden do? A three-pronged simultaneous attack that we have war-gamed out of my show. And no one on the radio is talking about that. Everyone else is talking about what we already know. But I've war-gamed that. And there's a lot going on in the Kuril Islands north of Japan where Russia has set up a lot of surface-to-air missiles to knock out American shipping, American battleships. They are now in position right in the rear of South Korea. In other words, South Korea, our forces there, could be boxed in. Russia's also put in a lot of other type of missile systems there to attack ships and planes. North Korea, their dictator, Kim Jong-un, has been amassing troops quietly on the South Korean border, from my intel sources. Very interesting what's going on. China, we know for months, has been trying to get into a war. They keep telling us to back off Taiwan. It's very, very obvious to me that they're going to be going in there at some point, like Hong Kong. And it's very obvious to me that Russia is going to be going into the Ukraine at some point. This is very, very expensive for countries to move troops, pay for fuel, and move around weapons systems. It's not done for free. It could cost them a lot of money out of their treasury, out of their military budgets to do all of this. Governments do not do this stuff willy-nilly. At the drop of a hat, there is a reason why things are done. And I believe that, you know, there's an old saying that nothing happens by coincidence when you're talking about a national government. So think about that scenario as we enter 2022. After, of course, we have a great time. We're going to drink and be merry, enjoy our friends and loved ones, enjoy the cooler weather, have a lot of great food and fun and revelry. But the new year, my friends, though I hate to be the bearer of bad news, don't shoot the messenger, could be one hell of a new year. We may usher it in with a bang in more ways than one all around the world. The world's poised for war. We wish it was poised for peace. We want peace in our day. But at the same time, we are a world at war. We know that these things are always going on. Governments are always plotting. They're always looking at this information, and they're always trying to get curry favor and to win and to get more empire, to get more territory. Governments feel they have to do this constantly. It's a constant throughout history. Conquer or be conquered. Kill or be killed. You can hold your olive branches all you want. The problem with that is that everyone else is holding arrows, and they're directed against you. Now, the American symbol is the eagle. With one hand, it's holding the olive branch. On the other hand, it's holding 13 arrows to symbolize the 13 colonies. America's military has been gutted under Obama, briefly restored under Trump, and now gutted again under Biden. We are in no shape or capacity to fight Russia or China, two or three fronts, or even one, for that matter, at any one given time. I believe there are many patriots inside of our military still, but there's also a lot of people, a lot of malcontents they brought in under Obama and Biden, a lot of people who do not belong in the military, who are just there for the paycheck or to socially engineer it and re-engineer it into the world of their choice, into their worldview. They have no intention of fighting the war. They have no intention of fighting for this nation. To them, the military is one of the last institutions that must be socially re-engineered. And by God, they're going to do everything they can to do it. That's where we're at. And right now, it's time to start our illustrious show. You've reached the Von Wien Show. Infamous, rogue, and legendary. Let the show begin. To all, this is your geopolitics war game situation room on the radio coast to coast. We also want to thank the Scottish Guard in the chat room and others like the Gunslinger and others that are out there. Many of you have reached out to me earlier on Gab and elsewhere today. I appreciate that as well. Well, the Belarus dictator Lukashenko declares that the Ukraine is ours, he vows to keep, to help Putin rebuild the old Soviet empire. So what you're seeing is Putin was devastated in 1991 at the fall of the Soviet Union. They want that Soviet red beast empire back. They want it intact. They want it. They want their empire back, bottom line. And they want all the satellite states to go along with them. The Ukraine's very rich, has minerals, money, good people, good land to grow food on. It's a key factor. They have water supplies there. And they want it back in the fold. They do not want the Ukraine to be a separate state. As many of you know, the Ukraine became a separate state after the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991. But Putin's rebuilding the empire. Putin wants it all back. And with that, let's get to our phones, and the Gunslinger in Texas can't wait to hear what he has to say tonight. Let's get him on the air. Gunslinger, are you there tonight? Going once. Going twice.
Yes, can you
are
hear
you there?
Yes, can you hear
we
me?
Got you.
There we go.
Ty gets you on front and center tonight. How are you doing?
Yeah, pretty good. Fabulous weather in Texas. We hit 85 degrees a day. Can you believe that?
I heard. Yeah.
Normal high is 59. Do the math. Normal high is 59 for this time of year. I'll take it. Hell yeah, I'll take 85. Yeah, you was thinking, or you were saying something about Pearl Harbor a while ago. I'd like to comment my 2 cents worth on that one. You know, it was a terrible situation. There's no doubt about that. All those sailors and people that, you know, lost their lives and everything. Terrible, terrible situation. But I think it's the government's fault. I think that they knew it. Okay. They knew that the Japanese was going to invade. All right. Think about it. We're on the verge of World War II at that time. I mean, the United States were just itching to get into that war. Okay. They were literally itching. Now, you have a president that all of a sudden, out of the blue, orders the entire Pacific Fleet into Pearl Harbor. Now, I've never been to Pearl Harbor. Mm-hmm. I'd love to go. But I've seen pictures and video of it. It's what we call in Texas a box canyon. It's one way in, one way out. Okay?
That's right.
And those ships were set so perfectly for them Japanese Zeros to come in here and, or come in there and shoot ducks. It's like shooting ducks in a setting pond. Setting ducks in a pond, whatever you want to call it. Okay?
Absolutely.
Okay? They just mowed them down. I mean, just like they were just, they knew exactly what to hit, when to hit. It's too perfect, okay? The whole situation is too perfect. So I think that they intercepted codes or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just too perfect. What do you think?
I agree. It was a turkey shoot. There's a lot of rumor and speculation, like I was saying in the monologue, that FDR desperately wanted to get us in that war. And I can show people a ton of circumstantial evidence before 1941. Let's go back to 39 and when Hitler, when he invaded Poland. But a lot of people don't tell you in our liberal history classes that, yes, Hitler invaded Poland, and for good reason, because the Polish troops and their generals were bragging that they could invade Germany and take it over. And there were skirmishes along the Polish border. And there was a lot of Germans that got shot and killed who were farmers and ranchers or just regular people on the Polish border. A lot of skirmishes there. They don't talk about much. But the locals will tell you all about it, you know. And also, they were taking pot shots at the German soldiers. You know what those are? You know, grab a rifle and shoot a few rounds and duck and cover. Also, they don't tell anybody that the Soviet Union invaded Poland from the east. Poland was the deal was the Germans invade from the west, and at the same time, the Soviet Red Beast Army invaded Poland from the east. Yet all the attention goes on the Nazis, not the Soviets. Now, during that time, there were a lot of cables between FDR and Churchill about the war. And, you know, Churchill knew that England was going to war, and they were at war at that time pretty much, and they were begging FDR to get into the war any way you could. What a lot of Americans don't know is that in the 30s, America had a pro-German, pro-Reich point of view. And what they did was they told the media houses, and all their newsrooms and all their journalists and all their editorial writers to start writing negative articles about Germany and about Hitler. People also don't know that Hitler, I'm sure you know this, but Hitler was you know, Time Magazine's Man of the Year.
Yeah, that's
a year or so before. And that was sold coast to coast in America. Americans were fascinated by the Third Reich and Adolf Hitler. Now, it's funny, the deep state media machine was turned on by FDR and was told to write up these articles. And so what they did, they got anti-German sentiment in America to turn against Germany. At the same time, they had anti-Japanese sentiment that they would. Now, this is the levers of government, how they can sway, you know, public opinion, how they can sway people. Right. Now, a lot of people also don't know, during the mid to late 1930s, you had the American Bund movement, which was the pro-Reich movement in New York. In fact, they had a huge, huge convention at Madison Square Garden. You also had the Silver Shirts out there in Los Angeles, another, you know, sort of a Third Reich group. So there's a lot of different groups during the Depression that really did not think our republic, so-called republic, was going to survive. And they were marshaling their wherewithal at that time. But to zip through that, once they got the anti-German sentiment going, and once they got the Japanese to attack us, which is what they wanted, FDR cut off their oil, and the Japanese said we have to have the American oil. At that time, we were producing tons of oil. Unlike today, where we import, right? But they wanted our oil so they could expand in Asia against China, Burma, Australia, the Philippines, etc. And so when FDR cut off the oil to the Japanese people, to their emperor, and their war cabinet was an act of war, and so they attacked us. And that was exactly what they wanted them to do. And that's why they made the attack very enticing and very attractive to the Japanese Navy. And you're right, and they let those ships sit there for a long time. We had Japanese spies in Hawaii. It's been documented. And they simply reported back, all the ships are here. We can crush America's fleet, take over Hawaii, then use those bases to attack the mainland. And that's exactly what was on their mind. So, and my uncle, by the way, was at Pearl Harbor. Every member of my family has fought in a war since before 1776, to be honest. We came over here in the 1690s. But my uncle was there at Pearl Harbor. Now, he wasn't a pilot. He was on leave, actually, being a Sunday. He told me the story. He was with a local Honolulu girl. And to be honest with you, they were partying the night before, and he was pretty much, I think he was drunk off his ass drinking sake. And he said, I remember us passing out at her Honolulu apartment right off the base. He was in the Army Air Corps, and he had the most worst hangover ever. He goes, he said, I'm not going to tell you I was a hero, but he goes, I woke up hearing bombs. Can you imagine having the worst hangover, and all you hear is bombs and machine gun fire? Okay. The girl's screaming, he tells me. And he said, I wanted to get her the hell out of there away from the base. So we jump in the Jeep, and he's driving down this military road, and they get strafed by a Japanese Zero. He rams the Jeep off the road into a ravine. And they duck and cover there for a while. And then this attack is going on, right? And then he basically hitches a ride with the Jeep, leaves her there. So you'll be safe here in this little trench. And they had those all over the place, of course, already built in. And he jumped on a Jeep, went to the base, grabbed a gun. It was a 50 caliber on the back of the Jeep, and he was firing at the Japanese Zeros. And he thinks he shot one down, but he's not sure. But he said he was just firing away, and they were everywhere. He said they were like hornets. They were everywhere, treetop level. With the rising sun, I'll never forget it. So that was his story about my other uncle was in Burma for the Flying Tigers. And he wasn't a pilot, but he was an expert machine gunner. And he was in the jungles, and he basically was teaching our guys how to shoot you know, how to protect their planes, our Flying Tiger planes there and the bases from Japanese attack. And the Japanese were attacking those bases. And there were a lot of Americans who were there. A lot of people don't know that there were ads in American paper saying, young men, do you want to see adventure? Do you want to make great pay? You know, join the Army Air Corps. Join the they had a special detachment for American men that wanted to go overseas. And if you're a pilot, and if you shot down a Japanese Zero, they paid you $500. Big money back in those days.
Big money.
Big money.
Yeah. Big money. Yeah,
right. Absolutely. And if you were enlisted, they would pay you a lot of money, too, to go over there, you know, free room and board and the adventure of a lifetime. Well, my uncle said, I want the adventure of a lifetime.
He got it.
And I don't blame him. He got it.
Yeah.
He got it. Yep. He saw a lot of action out there in those jungles of Burma. And a lot of things in that war were never documented, were never talked about or photographed. So it's an amazing world, right?
It's absolutely fantastic, you know, because, like I said, those ships were just like sitting ducks. I mean, you couldn't even design a arcade game better than the way those things were positioned, okay? Yeah, I mean, think about it. Like I said, it was a box canyon, one way in, one way out. You sink a couple of ships in the inlet of that box canyon, man, the rest of them are screwed. How you get out? You ain't, okay? You ain't, and they didn't, okay? So when you have that, and the precision of those things, just like you said, I've seen the video, the actual, some of the black and white footage. You got to be kidding me. They hit targets like they knew where they were. And they did. I think they had leaked intel, okay, that was already a setup. And remember that admiral that launched that whole thing, and they interviewed him a short time later or whatever, whenever they interviewed him, and they said, well, why didn't you just go ahead and just invade the mainland? Hell, you was right there. And he said, well, there would be a gun behind every blade of grass. So that proved there it was a setup. I mean, if it wasn't, then he would have went on and invaded the mainland here, okay? But that had to be the main setup with Pearl Harbor. And guess what? Boom, World War II, we got in there. So that's it's a no-brainer. But when they don't tell you these things, all the way up to the assassination of Kennedy right here in Dallas up there, they cover up things.
Right.
You see how this was covered up? They cover up key elements, key information, and then they black it out for the next 50 years. They seal it. Why? When you hide or when you seal information like that, JFK, Martin Luther King, 9/11, all that stuff, been sealed for the next 50 years, can't touch it. You know what you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
You're hiding something. You are hiding the fact that it was an inside job on all of them, okay, across the board, and they knew that this stuff was coming, it was going to happen, and they timed it. If they wasn't, they would just put it out there on the table and say, here's the evidence, this is what we got, let the American people judge. But no, they choose to hide it. So they figured that, well, in 50 years, most of the people that was there are going to be dead anyway. Who's a witness?
Exactly what they think. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And to his credit, William Cooper, you know, who was up here in northern Arizona as well, he had a lot of good things to say, and I do believe they assassinated him. He wrote that book, Behold a Pale Rider, and he had a lot of good things to say. Yeah, I just feel so sorry for America on so many levels. I feel sorry that we have suffered so much under such terrible, terrible leadership. I feel sorry for the young men and sailors and soldiers who were trapped in those ships, and they had their whole lives ahead of them, and they were just slaughtered. And you know, a lot of them drowned to death. And what a hell of a way to go. One of the biggest attacks ever. That's a hell of a way to go.
I
and
believe
you're,
on
you
the
know,
Arizona.
You're from Kansas.
Aren't there still
killers? Yeah, you're from Texas.
There's still sailors entombed in that Arizona, I think.
They heard tapping, I guess, spoons or was something on that, on the metal. It drove the workers crazy to hear our guys down below tapping on the metal. And I guess they had no way to bring up the ship or to dredge it. You'd think they could tow it to the shore and just get welders to go into those holes, but I don't know why they left it there. I'm not a tech guy like that, but I would have thought if you heard tapping, you could get them out of there. But they left them there to die. And I often wonder, I need to research that, why they did that. There has to be a reason. Because there were hundreds of people around the hulks of those ships, and it drove the workers nuts. And it's like I said, that was a very evil event. And if it is true that FDR knew about it and many people in our government knew about it, to me, they're in the worst place in hell, because you can't do that in this world, in my view, and get away with that stuff. The universe is going to really – paybacks are a bitch, man. And what they do for short-term gain, they lose in long-term gain. But I surely would have never put my guys at risk to go into a war like that. If we're going to attack them, then we're going to attack them. But we're not going to do it some pussyfoot way and let some, you know, Japanese task force just slaughter my guys. Screw that idea. In fact, the officer who would bring that to my attention, I would fire his ass right away. Probably get him on treason charges. That's a bunch of BS to do it like that. But that's one thing that really pisses me off, is how many half-assed, cockamamie schemes this country has done. And we could have been so great. We could have been so much better. Though life over here is great. We're not knocking America, folks. We want America just to be better. We want America to be even more successful. We want America to do so well that, you know, we don't want to descend into a second, third world country. We want to do better. And our leaders have just been these secret society people. Too many East Coast people, too many big shots from big tier one, tier two families calling the shots. And it's really, they're all part of a major cabal, you know. But at the same time, I take stock and I go, we're still a pretty great country. We have a lot going for us. Our standard of living still is pretty damn high in America. So you got to take the bad with the good. It's the good, the bad, and the ugly. Like I say, it's like an Italian spaghetti Western. You know, that's what America is. And we live a lot better, still do, than most of the world. And thank God we have our guns and ammo, because that's why they can't pull those stunts over here that they've been doing in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, UK, in Europe, all other white Western countries, to be blunt, you know. In fact, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, Ardern, just said that the COVID restrictions will never, never end in New Zealand. They are in permanent lockdown. Can you imagine? Unbelievable.
I just can't imagine something like that. I just can't imagine something like that, because technically we are the most armed, free country, quote unquote, in the entire world. Okay.
I
mean, compared to the other ones, just like you said, you know, Australia gave up their guns. Well, you dumbasses, you shouldn't have done it. Okay. Look at what you got now. That goes for all you know, Europe, all across those countries over there that willingly gave up their guns. Okay. Well, you know, that's what's keeping your government at bay is the armed citizens. That's why that admiral
that's
didn't
right.
invade the mainland. He said that there'd be a gun behind every blade of grass. You know what? He's damn right. There would have been and still would be today.
Right.
I mean, if that happened right now, today. So when you give up your guns like that, you might as well just bend over and kiss your ass goodbye because everything goes right out that window. Period.
Yeah. Well, that's why those countries are beta tests for America. Yeah. They you know, look, I always said if you're the New World Order, if you're really a globalist and you want, you know, full spectrum control over every country, you're not going to come to America first. It's armed to the teeth.
Yeah.
You're going to go. I would go to Australia first. Absolutely. There's no arms there. There's no arms in New Zealand. Perfect. Test study.
Perfect.
Both islands, perfect. Canada, go there. UK, go there. Europe is already, you know, they've been so cucked after World War II and so propagandized. Mm-hmm. What they're going to do is take over the world first. All those unarmed countries, then when they get them locked down completely, then they're going to turn their guns and their focus on America like a laser beam. And that, my friends, is when it's going to get really interesting. I still say we're going to see things over here that we've never seen. And don't forget that UN Agenda 2021 to 2030, those two agendas, they are designed like this. Between 2021 and 2030, supposedly in this next decade, so to speak, that this is when their new world order in Matrix is going to be unfolded and unleashed upon the world. Now, we've done a great job of pushing them back 20 or 30 years. Can we push them back another 20 or 30 years? I hope the hell we can. We have to, because we have no other choice. But when they start doing weird things over here, or false flag attacks, or, you know, more mass shootings or more bombings, you're going to know what it is. It's a hijacked government of ours that's being told to do things by globalist powers to usher in terror and chaos into the American streets, to usher in this wave of terror. And they don't care if people get killed. Remember, these are Satanists. They are the Luciferians. They have a Luciferian agenda. This is what they want. They want evil to reign. They want evil to be, you know, ushered into America. They want people to do crazy things. They love that.
They feed off it. Yeah, they're absolute
they are.
Demons. Okay?
They love it.
There's only two things in this world. There's either good or evil. And these people are evil. Okay? Any person that goes against what America stands for, you know, America was built with God, guns, and guts. Okay, anybody that
That's
goes
right.
against that founding principle, which is still in force today, they should leave the country. There's airplanes and ships leaving this continent every freaking day. Get your ass on one of them, because we don't want you here. Okay, if you hate this
That's
country
right.
so freaking bad, leave. What's keeping you here? I'm not holding a gun to your head. Say, oh, you got to stay here. Okay, no. It's freedom of choice.
Exactly.
Leave.
I encourage them to go. Get the hell out.
Them.
Hit the bricks, pal.
Get the hell
out. Right.
You know, because, you know,
get
you
them out
can't
of here.
Have, you can't have people like that in a country that is founded on freedom, and they go out there and go completely against it. You know, I guess that's one of the reasons that more and more states are coming on with the constitutional carry, like Texas did, you know, a couple months back. They see the crime exploding exponentially, and defunding the cops, you're not going to have enough cops around. What are you going to do? I mean, what are you going to do? The only person that can protect you is the person that's looking back from the mirror. Have a nice night.
That's right. Absolutely. And also, there's a lot of people that are like militant blacks or minorities, not all. There's a lot of people that aren't, but there's a lot with the BLM crowd, and you also have militant whites that are in Antifa. But for the blacks, they've been told to their face by the two African nations, Ghana and Liberia. Come over here. Leave America. We will take you in with open arms. And they repeatedly say, come to Ghana. Now, really and truly, if you're going to go to Africa, Ghana is the place to go, or Liberia. Ghana is one of the most up-and-coming countries in Africa, actually. They're hardly ever at war. They believe in capitalism. They have a little, and you can go there if you're a black guy and you want to get back to your roots and start, and the government will welcome all those black Americans with open arms. So they use the dollar, I think, mainly too. So I always say everyone's got options. You just got to figure out which options you want. And if you hate America that much, you hate the real country, you hate the people in flyover country, just get out of here and leave us all alone. Just go. Just go. Yeah, we are here. I have made, my family, like many others, have made the investment here. And like I said, this is right now, my mind says I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to stand and fight and do what I got to do. So they can take that any way they want it. But that is what, you know, we need to come over here from Germany to cut and run. So we've spilled enough blood, and this is my land. So I don't care what the UN says, screw them. I don't care what the EU says, screw them too. Screw the whole DNC and the Marxists in Washington, D.C., the District of Criminals is what's really known by on the street. Those people are evil, and we know that a lot of those people are anti-American. They're anti-capitalism. They want to usher in a new brand of Marxism, a soft communism, they call it. There's a Marxist globalist coup going on, folks, coast to coast. But Gunslinger, great talking to you, man. You have a great night out there, bud. Appreciate it.
All right, you too.
You got it, man. Thank you. We'll get Lincoln on here in a minute, too. He's going to be coming on here in a bit. But right now, we'll play a few promos at our top of the hour, and they sound a little bit like this.
This is Jim Rockford. If the tone, leave your name and message, I'll get back to you.
Hey, Jimmy, it's your old buddy Angel calling you on the line there, and I was about to sit down and do like we do every Thursday night and listen to this guy, Von Weehunt, on the radio. He's a good old-fashioned machismo, hard-styled, mechanic of the airwaves, Jimmy. but what I want to ask you first before I did that is before I get into my popcorn here, I've got a game coming up, poker game. It's going to be absolutely beautiful, beautiful scam. I got that city councilman showing up. We've got oil shakes. We got other people, maybe pornographers showing up too. And I got a beautiful cover I'm going to be using for this one, man. I just need $2,000 to $3,000 to use of this game for to buy in, and then I'll get it back to you in like a couple weeks to maybe a couple months, Jimmy. You think you could do that for me? I'll be here listening to Von Weehunt's show, all right? I'll wait for your call, buddy. I'll wait for your call.
And aren't you tired of hearing Dr. Death Mengele Fauci talk every day as he's the most dangerous bureaucrat in Washington, D.C., in my book? This guy says it's okay for you to have a great time during the holidays. Well, he's given us permission to have a great time. It's so big of you, Dr. Fauci, to grant us a great time during the holiday season. We should be so grateful that you bestowed upon us the permission slip to have a good time during the holidays. He was on the media talk show, Talk Circuit, this week, saying that, oh, yeah, the Americans should wear the mask indoors. Everyone should be vaccinated who comes to your home. You should sit down with your family and enjoy it. Well, my rendition of that sounds a little bit like this instead.
Dr. Fauci, with an important message.
Yes, we were talking about masks sometime back, and I said it's poppycock. You don't need to wear a mask. The virus is micro-sized anyway, and masks really don't stop anything. But now they're saying, even so, wear a mask. Put your mask on, made in China. does cut down your oxygen levels. It will increase the carbon monoxide rate in your body from the oxygen levels dropping. But don't worry about that. That's just a minor distraction. We're saving lives. We're saving lives, yes. That's the whole point of this whole thing. Put your China-made mask on. Thank you.
That's about the way it goes. Pretty amazing. You know, Dr. Fauci's been in the news a lot this week. Everyone's getting tired of hearing his spiel about the mask and everything else. Getting very, very old hearing about that. And just unbelievable. Well, you've reached the infamous Von Wehen show. Is it Mission Impossible to save America? You decide, folks. You always decide in the country.
Your mission, if you choose to accept it, is to sit down and listen to the Von Wehen show each Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. That enigma code again is blogtalkradio.com, where geopolitics, current events, breaking news, history, and brilliant conjecture and callers will always be a part of the show. So don't be left outside in the cold. This is your secret agent invitation for what awaits you. So come into the radio octagon and castle on the Rhine, where eagles dare. The Von Wehen Show. Your mission is to be there to make a better you, to make a stronger neighborhood, and to make America great again. This message will self-destruct in 30 seconds.
Yes, we all know that America is the last bastion, and we are the last obstacle to their complete takeover by the New World Order, and we know it. And with that, let's get to the back of the phones, and the Irish pirate is there, our tech wizard, and his wizardry. Are you there, Irish?
Yes, I am.
All the way in, the defender.
Let me shut up. I was listening to GCU in the background as well. Because I'm playing Arizona State tonight, I had to be curious.
Yes. What a hell of a game.
Well,
good seeing you last night.
Yes, it was.
We had met for our meeting. And, so what are your thoughts tonight, man? What's going on?
Wow. I think the biggest thing is what we were talking about during that meeting. You were asking a lot of questions, and quite often – my answer was we need to look at the origins of where weird mm-hmm. behavior comes from. And so many times it turned out to just simply be rebellion. In other words, it's not left or right. And for most of us, it's up or down. But it's mm-hmm. also good versus evil, which we've brought up sometimes. But the evil is almost always in the form of a rebellion. Somebody says, why can't mm-hmm. I just do what I want to do the way I want to do it, regardless of what the rules
right.
are. And the answer has always been, if we didn't have rules, then you wouldn't need to rebel, but then you and I would be fighting constantly. So what's the point of not having rules is actually the answer that I have to that. And so whether or not someone has chosen to, for example, be gay or to be woke or to be somebody who honestly believes that a government can be benevolent, which obviously shows no educational promise whatsoever, because first of all, governments have to lie to keep their populations quiet. Because everybody's always going to ask the government for something if the government is actually responsive. So the problem we have is the best people in our community and in any community in America where things are going the right way at all, there are people out there that know right from wrong, and they're willing to let other people hash it out to decide what is going to be the top priority. Because we're not a democracy. We can't just vote on everything all the time.
Right.
Sooner or later, somebody has to represent us. At every possible moment, and this is what I truly believe, at every possible moment, that person that represents us should be us, ourselves. We should have a very, very limited amount of representation from a third party, especially. Some of us may have a best friend. Mm-hmm. Some of us may have a girlfriend or a wife. I mean, that's representation too. It's a selection that has been made in public. And so I'm saying the best we have is ourselves, followed by our mates, if you will. And then the third party should be a scant minimum at that point. And that includes, in my opinion, you know, family doesn't speak for me. I'm sure glad they don't, because I don't get along with a lot of them. And so... Yeah, where does that take us? And the answer is very simply, we keep asking the question, what are we going to do? And the answer is, well, we're going to do it. We have to do it. If they're taking away our ability to let third parties, fourth parties to be able to serve us, if it gets to the point where a service entity is no longer trustable, you can't go to the grocery store because you may not be able to trust in the quality of what they're serving. These days, you may not be able to handle what your bank is offering you. You may not be able to handle what I know. A few years ago, my dad just simply hired a fairly popular local plumbing company to take a look at whether or not we could hook up something simple like a filter so that I could take tap water, filter it, make ice out of it. Too complicated because they were asking very simply for four digits for a simple connection like that. And so it priced out of range. The idea was out of range. The workmanship that was done wasn't worth it. And you could see the handwriting on the wall. Who are you going to trust in the future? The answer is ourselves. The hard part is we still have to train our neighbors. We still have to make friends with our neighbors. We still have to make friends with America as we jump on a talk show like this one and say, look, doesn't this sound correct to you? Doesn't this sound like we need to take care of ourselves first, start with your bedroom and work outward? You know, maybe you can get to the living room if you're really good, and the rest of your neighborhood if you're really good. Yeah, the idea that you're going to think globally and act locally is so backwards. You're going to have to act locally to be able to show the rest of the world. For example, you want to start a war here. I don't think it's going to work. You want to collapse the economy here. We'll look out after each other if we have to. Yeah, we don't want it. And absolutely. We're willing to show that if we have to. Because what we brought up last week was that if you're prepping, you're trying to keep the government. You're trying to keep the status quo. You're not trying to rip up the Constitution when you're storing food. No. And so this is the part that I'm having the hardest time, because there are people out there, and InfoWars has this on their new thing, Reset Wars. They say 30% of the people right now are hypnotized, 33% are taking a stand, and our best friends that we've got are the other 40%, which is what I've been bringing up. We're going to have to be able to convince them not to listen to the other 30%, which include the hypnotized and the people that are hypnotizing them, and be able to listen to the people that are being told that they are being told every day are crazy for actually wanting to take a stand against it. For actually, you know, they're telling you that there's this horrible
variant to a vaccine or variant to a virus that supposedly they make a vaccine for, but we've already figured out you can't make a vaccine for coronaviruses a long time ago. Either that or we found out a long time ago the PCR tests are phony, or we found out a long time ago that variants never come back stronger. I mean, sooner or later, there's got to be a place in time to jump off the bus that's going over the cliff and say, none of this is correct.
It's all about the variant, Iris. All about the variant, man. The new variant. They're going to unleash a new variant every damn year. I'm telling you, man. It's coming. Hey, I got to put you on the hold. We got some callers that have come in as well. We'll get back to you hopefully in the latter part of the show, my friend. Hang on, buddy. Folks, get your adult beverage ready. I just been notified that we have some other callers here. I shall return very quickly. Retro 1980s flesh tones there. This is the night show, the radio show, the Von Wien show. I'm advised that our VIP guest is here in the green room. Let's bring him through. The famous author, Stephen Albany. How are you doing tonight, sir? Mr. Albany,
well,
are you there?
I am here.
Very good. Very, very good. Very good.
Yeah,
good to hear your voice.
Well,
we did miss you. Yes,
this is really a great show. I'm really happy to be back. You know.
Oh, so glad you're here. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you're the author of several books, and the audience knows that we spoke about Who Murdered Elvis a month or so ago. And I thought tonight, being that a few days ago was December the 7th, we talk about your other book, Who Murdered FDR? In the World War II era. And I know you've got a lot of intel about that to tell us, so I just can't wait. We're chomping at the bit to hear your words of wisdom and your intel and your research, sir.
Well, you know, this was – a lot of people don't know anything about this, and you hear these, you know, Who Murdered Elvis or Who Murdered FDR, and they think, you know, you're crazy and this and that and the other thing until they read the evidence.
Right.
And when I write these books, I let the evidence run with it. I don't control the evidence. The evidence controls me. I just gather the suspects, get the information, and let the evidence run. I think that all researchers have to do that to come up with what you need to come up with. So it's a very interesting book series. I like to think that what I do is art, maybe finger painting a little. but definitely contributed to popular culture. it takes people like me to sit back and say, you know, I wonder how deep the oceans would be if sponges didn't grow in it. You know, people like me need to be out
right.
there, so
love that.
FDR was a very interesting, of course, we know all about FDR, probably one of the greatest war presidents we ever had, if not the greatest. He guided the country through some horrific times. I have a fondness for FDR, and I also don't like him at all on some points. But you say what you want. Mm-hmm. I mean, the man was a genius, and he got us through a very rough time in America and helped millions of people. And he helped a lot of people. So,
Absolutely.
I did not know this. I thought that I was the only one who started down the rabbit hole of FDR and foul play. I didn't know that someone in the name, the man's name escapes me. But this has been out there for a while, differently. And I think that the story, it's an interesting story that just needs to be told. FDR, not everybody liked FDR. You know, he's painted in history books and on television and PBS as a second coming. And he helped a lot of people. And when you give people free money, guess what? They kind of like you. You know, it's been going on for a while.
Sure.
So, I mean, he was a godlike figure to a lot of people. But not all the people. You know, if you were a heavy hitter in the stock market, you were not his friend. He was taxing major industries over 100%. He had put clamps down on the stock market. He was not letting money flow very well. And every now and then you get lucky with your research. And I just didn't look into these individual people. I'm a student of history. I always have my head down reading books about history. And the people that I write about, I think are very obvious that they've been – foul play has happened to these people. And every now and then you get lucky with your research, and it was really lucky. Decades and decades after the case is closed and everyone's moved on and no one's looking, I'm looking. So when I read in his Daisy Suckley was one of his favorite cousins, and when I read in her diary that she published 50 years after his death entitled Closest Companion, and I read something on page 203 that says, and this is a quote, but I won't read the quote, I'll paraphrase it, the president's in bed for the fourth day and he still feels somewhat miserable. He's sick after mealtime. Dr. McIntyre, what the problem was, and he said it was a toxic poisoning, but we couldn't ascribe anything to it. So they're treating this guy with sulfa drugs. So here we have the White House physician, who later on went on to write the book entitled The White House Physician, knowing that he's being poisoned. It's right there. And I saw that, and my head almost exploded. So I was just casual reading, and I saw that, and I said, whoa, wait a minute. What? Let me back up. Hold on a second. I always thought, just from the outside looking in, that it was very odd Hitler, Mussolini, and FDR died within 18 days of each other. I thought that was a little convenient towards the end of the war. I always thought
I agree.
It was a little convenient that FDR just happened to drop dead when Allied troops were storming Hitler's bunker. I thought it was a little too convenient for me. So I started to poke around when I found that quote. I said, oh, we've got a problem here. So that's what steered me to this book. And I hope to inform a lot of people as to what, because the fairy tale princess who's been writing these stories that we've been taught is it's nonsense. You know, what the real story of FDR, his demise, should be taken right off the shelf in the library under fact and be put right next to Grimm's fairy tales. That's how bad this is. So it bothers me you know, when I write these books, people say, God, doesn't that bother you when you're writing these books? And you know what? I don't look at it that way. There's so much, so little justice left in this world. I like to think that the
right.
people that I write about have been so horribly maligned in history that, you know, when I write about them, I'm honoring them. I think that if FDR could read my book, I think he'd probably say, hey, great job. Finally, somebody got it. Telling us this isn't the case. There were people who really did not think a lot of him, and some of them were inside the White House. So, awful lot going on with this book. Where would you like me to start?
I'd like to get into the part about what you know about the Soviet spies inside the White House, what kind of drugs they were giving FDR, kind of delve into that a bit more, and then we can kind of fast forward to it was convenient that FDR was murdered because then the Soviet communists were able to carve up Eastern Europe a lot easier under Truman, and kind of delve into those areas would be, I think, very interesting for the audience.
Yeah. Like I said, not everybody liked FDR. On February 15th, 1933, somebody tried to kill him. He just got elected, and somebody tried to kill him, Giuseppe Zangara. And he was an estranged bricklayer, I guess. And he was in Miami, and he was trying to do him in. So, like I said, not everybody liked this guy. If they could have got to him, they would have. And unfortunately, the poor guy, apparently wasn't a very good bricklayer, and he wasn't a very good shot either, because he ended up killing the guy next to him, who was the mayor of Chicago, and he ended up getting a lot of care. But you can't make this stuff up.
Can't make it up, no.
Some of the people who were in the White House, I have to go back. You mentioned the communist thing and the Soviet thing. There were, of course, the CPUSA and the Communist Party of the United States of America started back in 1919, back under the tutelage of Woodrow Wilson, who was not a fan of the Constitution. He preferred the parliamentary system, where there were not three forms of government. Two of them were merged. The judicial and the legislative branches were together, so it was only like a two-party system. So FDR ends up Assistant Secretary of the Navy. He's a New Yorker. He was governor of New York. Been to the mansion. If you ever get the chance to go to Hyde Park, New York, and go to the Roosevelt Mansion, the Roosevelts live on the same, adjoining pieces of property to the Vanderbilts. And this is old, 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 old money. You know, back when people were bringing home, when people were living like the Waltons, these people were living, you know, out of your mind, the house and how nice it was. And, I mean, this is very, very old money. So you get a chance, a little glimpse into what he was like. So when...
I'd love to see
USA
that.
Was started. Oh, yeah, you should go sometime. When the CPUSA was started, FDR was intrigued by it. And we have to, when we talk about communists in America, pardon me, we have to, like, put an asterisk next to this. Communism was kind of touted as the new thing on the block that was fantastic. There's a lot of propaganda coming out of Europe. And, you know, of course, the Roaring Twenties had ended, and the capitalists, they thought had failed us. And the communists, that was their chance. They had a chance to say, well, look what capitalism did. It destroyed you. You need to have this system where everyone is cared for cradle to grave. And, you know, this is a superior system, so... Stalin, being the wizard that he was, he ended up sending invitations to people in the media, film producers, professors, to come over and see this wonderful spectacle of communism, how it works, and you know, they were taken to these in villages. They were phony towns is what they were. And they were only allowed to go where their escorts took them. And they were showed this new utopian society where everyone was happy and everybody worked and this and that. And they sent these people back to the United States with packets as to how to transform our society into that. So they had no ill intent. You know, the CPUSA was not formed with ill intent at all. And they're still in existence. You can look up online. Go to their website, and you can see whose platform that they're mirroring. I think you might be very surprised. So communists in America had their foothold before FDR really came into power, and he was in on it. He thought it was great because people were cared for, and we didn't have these peaks and valleys in the stock market and capitalism and so forth. So he was all on board with it. So communists were kind of baked with his regime, okay, if we can call it a regime.
Mm-hmm.
So they were all around this guy. And it was later revealed that they were, boy, you talk about all over the place. They were in the Attorney General's office. Everyone from Harry Dexter White to Alger Hiss, there were at least 15 high-ranking officials in FDR's White House who were known communists. And they were in, okay, I can run down the little list here because I have the note in front of me. So the Agricultural Adjustment Administration, the Attorney General's Office, the Department of State, the National Labor Relations Board, the Labor Advisory Board, the War Production Board, the Price Administration, the Treasury Department. We had communists in the Treasury Department, folks. And the last one was the Public Welfare Committee. And this was all discovered afterwards. And so the backbone of his New Deal was drafted by someone with a communist background. So if you're in the capitalist industry, you know, and you're trying to run industry, and you're trying to invest in the stock market, this guy's crippling you with all of this, you know, with all of this propaganda that was coming from, you know, the Soviet state. So there's a lot going on here. Matter of fact, the architect of the Lend-Lease program was the same person who started the New Deal, and it was Harry Hopkins. Harry Hopkins was a friend of Eleanor Roosevelt, who was very instrumental in the CPUSA, and it was Eleanor, who's a pretty fantastic lady, who was also FDR's cousin. FDR married his cousin. Just like Princess Diana and Prince Charles were cousins, look it up. I'm not making it up. If you go back far enough, they were cousins. So Eleanor was born a Roosevelt, married a Roosevelt, died a Roosevelt. No need to change the monogram there. So all of this is going on is FDR is coming into power, okay? And there's some bad blood going on. Some of the people within the White House, FDR was having affairs with some of the people in the White House who were friends of Eleanor Roosevelt. A lot of suspects there. Of course, we have, and here's just a smattering of names that I can throw out who easily done anything to get this guy out of office. DuPont, George Eastman, the Kodak fame. Harvey Firestone, Samuel Colgate, Henry Ford, the Frick family from Carnegie Steel, the Heinz family, the Hilton family, the Mellons, Robert Woodruff, the chairman of Coca-Cola. All of these people are just on the fringe of the FDR circle because Elizabeth Shumatov is a Russian painter who had painted all of their portraits and had also painted FDR's portrait. So we've got a little tight-knit community here surrounding FDR who are not necessarily friendly to FDR. So a lot of suspects in here, and Elizabeth Shumatov comes up again. interesting lady. She defected from Russia with her husband, Leo. And this is not me saying this, it's in her book. And she was quite, she had a fluent, influential family. She was an Ivanov. And she was a daughter of a general. And her husband, Leo, came to America on, quote-unquote, a mission for the provincial government headed by Alexander Kerensky. So
really?
Her husband, Leo, are bouncing around New York area, the pretty end of New York, not where I live.
Right.
I live west of Niagara Falls. No, I'm talking about the pretty end, you know, in Hudson Valley. Area. So
right.
They're bouncing around, and she manages, and she taught herself how to paint. And if you ever see her work, you've got to see this woman's work. She's really, really gifted. Leo Shumatov, her husband, ends up being a business manager for the Sikorsky Aviation Corporation. Sikorsky, again, is another Russian who's defected over here. All of these people are in the company of FDR, and any one of them could do him in, from the jilted lovers to the Russians who were over here who wanted FDR out of the way to carve up Europe, to the communists who are all over our government. It's quite an interesting mix. So that's how this book is starting to take shape. What I do with all of my books is I give the factual background, and then I provide you with a full list of suspects, which I kind of gave you an idea of.
Mm-hmm.
And then I take the suspects, and I run them through motive, means, and opportunity, which is the criminal process. And in the end, I come up with who murdered him, how they murdered him, the whole shot, and then they give the fallout from there. So this book is going to change a lot of people's minds. There's a lot of information here. It got so bad, the rumors in Washington after FDR died, they couldn't get this guy in the ground fast enough. It was like 69 hours, death to grave. They could not get this guy into the ground fast enough. No autopsy. Eleanor got so tired of hearing the rumors in Washington that had befallen her cousin, she hired a private investigator in 1957, 12 years after his death.
Wow.
And she had fought up with it. So the private investigator starts digging around, and he finally comes to the realization someone has to tell him. The attorney general at the time had to tell him. All of FDR's medical records were gone. They were in a locked file. They're gone. So the plot kind of thickens. So this is all of this going on in this book. Get yourself a piece of paper and a pencil, and I'll tell you how to get the book. Okay? I'll come back to that in a second.
Yeah, by all means, let's tell the audience. They're chomping at the bit. I've got my copy, Who Murdered FDR? Fire away, Stephen, on how folks can get and buy this book. They've got to get this book.
Well, this book is available on ebook and audiobook all the way around the world. It's available on Kindle. If you want to get a physical copy, go to my website. Go to whomurderedbooks.com, whomurderedbooks.com, and I'll even autograph it for you. A lot of people don't do that anymore. I do that because I think this information needs to be out to people, and people need to be happy with it. So I can get it to you in time for Christmas. I should quit. If I had the means, I would give this book to everybody for free. I don't. You know, if I had, you know, the days of authors living in mansions on a big hill somewhere, those days are long, long gone. We're average people.
Right.
So
that's right.
I want everyone to learn the history in it. I could sit here and tell everybody who did it, but I want people to understand the plot, how it happened, and how it changed our world. The world we're living in today was a result of this murder. If FDR had lived, the world would be a completely different place. So go to, like I said, whomurderedbooks.com, and I'll get you out a copy. And somebody on your Christmas list is going to love this book, cross-genre book. It's conspiracy and history and suspense and murder and all of that stuff rolled up into one. Very interesting work. And poetry influenced, believe it or not. Bond, don't laugh at me.
No, I love it. Murder, intrigue, political intrigue. Oh, my God. World War II, that era is fascinating. Great, great, great stuff. Folks, it's a great stocking stuffer. I mean, come on, Who Murdered FDR? I mean, I have started to read my version of it, my book here, and there's so many books that I want to read over the holidays, to be honest with you. After all the parties, of course, we're going to party first and drink and be merry, right? But then when it kind of slows down in January, February, and that's when Arizona gets cold, or our version of cold, it's a good time for me to read. But I had a few questions here from the chat room I wanted to bounce off you from our great chat guide here, Scottish Guard. He wants to know, was the same poison that was used on FDR was also used on Stalin later to bump him off?
Actually, no.
Okay.
Stalin was knocked off by someone in the Politburo. His name is Beria. And he knocked off. That's a great, what a great question. Somebody's on their game. Great, good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Stalin was knocked off by Beria.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the drug of the day was warfarin. Warfarin was tasteless and colorless, and they were putting it in everything. And people were having, you know, they're going into warfarin's rat poison, actually. Disease is rat poison.
Right.
And people were bleeding out. And that's exactly what happened to Stalin, I think, 1953, I think. And
yeah.
Beria was a state security administrator. So he was proud that he killed Stalin. And Stalin was probably one of the most, the biggest megalomaniac I think I've ever seen. He was paranoid. What a character.
One of the biggest murderers of history. Yeah, for sure.
Really,
terrible
really
man.
Was. I mean, the Great Purge. I mean, he just murdered anybody who could get
him.
It was incredible.
He killed everybody. The Holodomor, he purged his military. Yeah.
He even killed his doctor. Because the high-ranking officials were going there for massages and so forth, and they were talking to him, and he hit him, murdered. He murdered both of his wives. FDR was completely convinced that Stalin had murdered his wife. And, you know, here he is, FDR. saying that in the same breath, he's, you know, eating the caviar that Stalin gave him. You know, I mean,
right.
I mean, you have to really, really shake your head here. So most people in history would just say, you know, well, he died of the advance of polio, and, you know, that's what happened to him. That's the Easter Bunny story that we've been taught. I call it the, quote-unquote, the official fiction.
Yes.
FDR's doctors were baffled. And he had the best doctors you could buy. He was a Navy man, so his top doctors were Navy men. Vice Admiral Surgeon General of the Navy was Admiral Ross McIntyre. That was his chief doctor. Howard Bruin was the Lieutenant Commander of the Navy. He was his cardiologist. So he was getting sick after mealtimes. After lunch, after dinner, his blood pressure would go crazy, and it wouldn't respond to medicine. And they were absolutely baffled. They couldn't figure out what is wrong with this guy. You know, he would go, his blood pressure was, I think I read somewhere, it would go like 310 over 190, and it would bounce back and forth. And I mean, I don't know how he even survived it. And three hours later, he seemed to level off and be fine. But no matter what they prescribed this guy, it didn't help. So even with the toxic poisoning that I revealed earlier, they were giving him sulfa drugs, and it wasn't working. So they got so baffled, they just put their heads together and said, okay, look, we've got to get somebody who knows more than us. We need a second opinion. We're going to go to the doctor of the day, Frank Leahy. Dr. Frank Leahy was a world-renowned surgeon, medical administrator, teacher. Guy was brilliant. He went on to found the Leahy Clinic in Boston in 1923. He examined FDR in March of 1944. And if you look at the photos in my book, It's FDR at the Tehran Conference in 1943 and at the Yalta Conference in 1945, just in that tiny march of months. By the time Yalta happens, FDR is a walking skeleton.
Yeah, he is. I've seen those photographs. Scary.
Yeah, his mouth is gaping open. He's all, you know, sullen and shrunken, and, you know, what the hell is going on with this guy? So
he's being poisoned.
He's being systematically poisoned from inside the White House by someone he pissed off. Because when he went away to Warm Springs, Georgia, quote-unquote, the little White House, and he was in the company of different people and eating different food, guess what? Golly, Bob Howdy, he got stronger, and he started coming back to life and doing well. He goes back to the White House, sick again. So they take him to continue the story. They take him to Dr. Frank Leahy, who examines him and fully and says, this is a dead man walking. He said, you know, don't run for a fourth term. Don't run for a fourth term. You're not going to make it. So the memo can be found in my book. It's also online, and it was published. 2011, I think the History Channel published the full Dr. Leahy's report, and because it was concealed for years. When no one's looking, geeks like me, history geeks and nerds like me are often looking. So,
right.
Advance of polio would be muscle and joint weakness, increased muscle pain, trouble breathing and swallowing, sleep apnea, becoming cold, easily exhausted and fatigued. That's not what was happening. Dr. Leahy, who examined this man, said that the symptoms were, there's an entire litany, I won't bore everyone with them, but they were cardiovascular, intellectual and mental, sensory, gastrointestinal issues, nervous system issues, skeletal issues. He had renal damage. His kidneys were failing. And I go way more in depth in the book. I just can't do it justice. But the list I just read is not the advance. It is not due to the advance of polio. It's due to the advance of poisoning. His body is literally shutting down, poisoning this guy. So that intrigued me. To no end, and I'm like a dog with a bone, you know. I just have to keep going and going. So
right.
My friends are at the beach, you know, and it's a beautiful July day. They're all at the beach. Where am I? With my head down in these books, trying to find the answer to this, and I finally get it.
That's my line.
So I thought, you know, I mean, some people, hey man, some people skydive, some people go to the beach. You know, I mean, this is what I do, you know, and
right.
For me, it's weird. It's not about money for me, you know. I got so much time in all of my books. They'll never be profitable. For me, it's about the reckoning of it. I have to know. I've got to get this, you know. And I think I finally got it right. So I thought I was the only one who was being poisoned. Wrong. He wasn't. Everyone around him was being poisoned. On the way back at Yalta, at Yalta, they were having a steak and potato dinner with all of the leaders. FDR turns green. He starts sweating. He starts to vomit. And who's with him? Harry Hopkins. Harry Hopkins has to actually rush him out of the room. He was being poisoned right at Yalta. So on the way back from Yalta, which was quite a trip, you know, he was on a battleship, Major General Pa Watson, one of the biggest generals we have, died on the ship coming back from Yalta of a cerebral hemorrhage. There were all kinds of people in his circle who were dying of cerebral hemorrhages. And I think that they were all being poisoned from inside the White House for reasons I'll cover in the book. I won't go there. His secretary, Marvin McIntyre, no relation to his Dr. Ross McIntyre. They're totally different people with even spelled differently. He died mysteriously in 1943 of a cerebral hemorrhage. All of these people around him were having these odd cerebral hemorrhages. So, you know, so the USS Quincy coming back from Yalta, I think they tried to knock him off at Yalta, poison him right there at the meeting. And Roosevelt was really an interesting guy. Not only was he quite a genius in a lot of ways, he was made of tougher stuff than they thought, and he lasted a good long time, even with all of this going on. So, I mean, we're in the biggest war the world had ever seen, and they're trying to knock each other off. The opposition leaders are trying to get to each other big time. Hitler had 42 attempts on his life. 42! From 1933 to 1944. They tried to kill Churchill. He survived, and I'm sure Taylor relation to Churchill, actually. He survived dozens of attempts from opposition leaders trying to get him. Hitler was trying to take him out big time. One of them is actually comical. It's right out of Maxwell Smart. You can't make this up. They did their intel. We all have spies. America has spies. The other countries have spies. There are real James Bonds in this world, folks, okay? And it was even going on there. So the spies around Churchill, this is kind of, I love this. I laugh right out loud when I heard this. The spies around Churchill realized that he liked dark chocolate. So Nazis were a lot of things, but stupid was not among them. They designed a bomb, and they decorated this thing as though it was this fantastic chocolate bar. And they were going, it made its way into Churchill, and it almost worked. He was supposed to unwrap it, and it was going to blow his head off. And it almost worked. I mean, this is the level that these people were going at each other. So it's very interesting. Erwin Rommel, the Desert Fox, was trying to take out Hitler, and he was for on July 20th, 1944. The plot was uncovered, and he was taken from his home, and they take a cyanide capsule. So they were trying to knock off the head of the snake from outside other governments to within their other governments. Very interesting time in history. Even Operation
Long John.
I'm sorry, there's a delay here. Sorry, buddy. I feel like I'm talking.
Oh, no, a problem at all. Go. Yeah, there's like a 1 second delay on the studio board. No problem at all. Just go. Keep on rolling here. We are doing great.
Hitler had devised Operation Long Jump, where he was going to wipe out all of the other leaders at one of the conferences. I think it might have been the Tehran conference. So these guys were going at it pretty hot and heavy. And, of course, we have a lot of interesting mix of characters here. We have Stalin. We've got Uncle Joe, who was really a he was really something. He he was one of the original members of the Pull-Up Bureau, and he would pit people against each other so they would kill each other, and he killed whoever was left.
Hmm.
I mean, this guy was, he was, Lennon hated him. And, of course, you know, we all know what happened to Lennon. Lennon's wife, Krupskaya, said that he was only out for himself, and he needed to be, they needed to get him out of power. They needed to get him out of the government. He was, he was that worried about him. So we have Stalin running around, you know, wanting to rule the world. He didn't want to split the world. He wanted to rule the world. I mean, come on.
Right.
And we have Churchill, who, you know, Winston Churchill is trying to hang on to the whole of his island. And, you know, you have FDR, who is doing the Lend-Lease program and who's, you know, trying to fight the good fight. There's a lot of interesting mix of characters here. So,
oh, there is.
There is no way with what was released by the Dr. Leahy, and it's in my book and it's also online, that laundry list of symptoms was the advance of polio. It was impossible. It couldn't happen. So someone within the White House and that circle was systematically poisoning him with a poison that no one knew about in this hemisphere yet. You have to remember, this is the 1940s. So we're used to thinking in America and saying, oh, wow, you know, we know all there is to know. Well, I'll tell you what.
No.
Some of the countries in the world in that block, they're 1,700 years old or thousands of years old in Europe. We're the new kid on the block. You know, a lot of what we know, you know, we derived from them, and they knew a long time before us. So this was a poison that was already outlawed. We knew nothing about it over here. And it's virtually undetectable at that point. So we have someone in his circle who's going back and forth to those countries, who's learning about this, who has taken that information back to our White House, and it was timed perfectly. They wanted him at the end of the war to die off. So we'll go to Warm Springs, Georgia. Okay? The death of FDR, Warm Springs, Georgia. He is, looks terrible. And he has appointments and social gatherings, and he just loved being in Warm Springs. This was like his favorite place ever. If you've ever been to his mansion, all you have to do is look out the back door, and it's an incredible spectacle, the scenery from this back door. But he loved Warm Springs, Georgia. I wanted to mention that, but let me come back to Warm Springs for a second. His house is now a museum. And upstairs over the museum is the FDR National Archives, where I took a blanket and a pillow and went through everything.
Right.
You ever get the chance to go. They just renovated the entire place, and they pumped, you know, $30 million into it. So as you go to the museum, of course, FDR was famous for his fireside chat. So you could
sit
into period specific living rooms and listen to the fireside chat that he would have given at that time. It's kind of design period specific. Very cool. So back to Georgia.
Well, going forward, the Von Wehunt Show will be the fireside chats of America, Mr. O'Baney. This will be the new fireside chats of America. Yes.
I like this, sir.
Yes.
I like that very much. So, going back to Warm Springs, Georgia, FDR looks terrible. He's having his portrait painted by who? Elizabeth Shumatov. Why? I have no idea. I don't know if Secret Service didn't exist, if they didn't do their homework. I have no idea. But why this Russian, who was here on a mission with her husband from the Russian government, is alone with our president, it just boggles your mind. I mean, they couldn't have been this dumb. So, she's a painter. She has a photographer with her, and this is a very interesting guy. We know him as Nicholas Robbins. That's what he was saying his name was. His name was not Nicholas Robbins. If you trace it back, his name was Nicholas Cobbins, and his naturalization papers from Russia say that he was Nicholas Kubikinski. So we have a person, two people from the Russian government, one under two aliases, alone with our president. And guess what? He dies. And no one talks about it.
Interesting. Right.
We have two foreign spies alone with FDR, and he dies.
How convenient.
He did die of a cerebral hemorrhage. He absolutely did. They were telling the truth. No autopsy. No autopsy.
Wow.
They called another doctor named James Paulin. He was summoned to Warm Springs when FDR died because one of the doctors wasn't there. McIntyre wasn't there. I believe Dr. Bruin was. He was a friend of James Paulin was a friend of Frost McIntyre and was called there and agreed that the cause of death was cerebral hemorrhage. So you can't make this up. This mix of all of these people and the spies in and around him, Roosevelt. I have to remember, this is the greatest war we had ever seen, and I hope we never see anything like this again.
Right.
You know, I mean, you talk about high stakes. They were trying to you can believe the Duquesne spy ring was a Nazi spy ring. It was the largest spy network in American history. 33 members, and their mission was to assassinate FDR and to sabotage our government. And they had enough people in place in our government to do it. They got caught, and I won't tell you what happened to them. You'll have to read the book in history. Operation Pastorius, again, Nazis were at it again. 8 members. They were created after Pearl Harbor, and they attacked civilian targets, heads of state, and they were all uncovered. They all got the electric chair. I mean, this is the other side of history that they don't tell you. And there's lot of the other side of history that they don't tell you. Abraham Lincoln's assassination documents are still redacted.
Yes, that's right. That's right. After all this time.
And
there's a lot of things that go on in history that you and I have talked about before, Stephen, that there's a lot of hidden history. I always like to call it that, of things that are redacted, things that are blacked out, things that are buried, submerged from the American people. They don't want us to know hardly any of it because it would change our mental paradigm and our mindset. And that they can't afford. They want to keep snowing the people and keeping them blind. And we want truth to be found wherever it is, right?
Well, that's what they claim we want. You know, George Carlin said it best. They call it the American dream because you have to be asleep to believe it. The truth was suddenly introduced into the American society, the whole system would collapse. I mean, we've been living fairy tales forever, you know, and it's funny too because people are looking at history, but they're looking at the wrong history. You know, they're pissed at Christopher Columbus, you know, but they're not looking at real history like I'm looking at. I mean, the real things that shaped and changed and molded the world. They wanted FDR out of the way because he was too smart for him. He was very, very smart. He did some things politically that I wasn't fond of. I would say that I was an FDR fan to a point. I'm not a communist. I don't think the New Deal helped a lot of people. Saved a lot of lives. Unfortunately, according to history, it didn't bring us out of the Depression. So they tried to do a second New Deal, and it was shot down. And then they tried to pack the courts. There was a lot of pushing and shoving going on in America at that time. And, of course, FDR had a very cooperative media. So a lot of this took 50 years to come out. So I hear people say, and most people love truth tellers, you know, and everything I do is factual. It's evidentiary, you know. I tell the truth of what comes out later. And people love this stuff. When you tell the truth and not the official fiction of the truth, the real truth. Because America, again, I'm making news for everybody. America's a great country, all right? My ancestors came over on the Mayflower, all right? We fought and died in the Revolution. I'm as American can possibly be, all right? But not everything we do is fantastic. We do a lot of fantastic things. But we have propaganda here, too. You know?
Yes, we do.
And some of the propaganda has found its way into the history books. DR died of natural causes, and none of this went on. It did. It went on. And I think that some things are kept from people just because they don't think we can handle it. And there will come a time.
I agree.
50 years from now, 100 years from now, that the period of time we're living in right now, there will be truths told about what's going on. Everything from COVID-19 to 9/11 and all points in between. Some goofball like me 50 years from now will have no idea I ever lived on this planet and will start their own research and they'll start this all over again. And it's important to have people like us. So come around and say, well, geez, isn't it a little bit Maxwell Smart, you know, a little bit.
Right, exactly. Love that.
You know, and they think that poisoning is a little outlandish, and that, you know, I mean, it doesn't seem a little bit goofy that they would poison somebody, you know. And naturally, I had to do my research into that, too. Political poisonings happen frequently. Turkey's 8th president was poisoned with a glass of lemonade that was served to him at the Bulgarian embassy in 1993. It's to the point now where there's all kinds of people who have been poisoned through history. It was used as a weapon since 331 B.C. The Apostle John in the Bible was poisoned. Rasputin.
That's right.
I mean, look at what they did to Rasputin. I mean, he survived everything. I think maybe my mother's meatloaf would have done him then. But I can say that now. It's past Mother's Day. But
right.
Political poisoning.
Oh, he was hated by the Russian court.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Political poisonings were, they peaked during the Italian Renaissance in the 14th century. And they were, this is why every president, all the way back to before Lincoln, uses food testers. You know, Hitler was another one. He would have people eat his food first to see what happened to it. Napoleon, Mark Antony, Cleopatra, Henry VIII, Lincoln, these people all used food testers. So today, in the modern day, if you know what? I have to throw this in there. We're all being poisoned right now with GMOs and fluoride and chlorine and whatever they're
pushing
on us.
Exactly.
We're all being poisoned.
Chemtrails, too.
Yeah. Step up, take a number. You're all being poisoned. So today what they do for the modern-day presidents, it has to be such a problem, and I think it's a problem. I think that they did the – it's called the Presidential Food Safety Team. I think this is in place today because they know what happened to FDR. This is not by accident, okay? So do your homework. Look it up. The Presidential Food Safety Team, Google it. Look it up. Well, Google doesn't tell you the truth anymore. Now you'll have to find someone else because Google's telling us fictitious stories as well. But the Presidential Food Safety Team, look them up. This is what they do. They, prior to this safety team, they were using monkeys and dogs and military prisoners and all kinds of things to test food before the leaders ate the food. What the Presidential Food Safety Team does is they have set up an entire network of people inside, and it's over, the whole thing is oversaw by Presidential Guard and Secret Service and the lot, and they make the president's food. And everything is supervised. Everything from where the food comes from to they watch him make it, they watch him serve it. This is quite an operation to make sure that it's a secure zone so the president and the first family can have, you know, can eat food without complications. And when they go outside of the presidential zone, they have food screeners, and there are other things that they do. Some of the presidents who have traveled who have used food screeners were all of them: Reagan, Bush, Clinton, George W. Bush, President Obama. I'm sure Trump probably did. This is really a problem. This is bigger than everyone could possibly imagine. So the Presidential Food Safety Team is in place today because they know FDR was poisoned and going on for a while. So how far did you get to go?
They got to buy the book. That's just the bottom line, Stephen. Folks, you got to go to whomurderedbooks.com. We've been talking to the famous author, Stephen O'Baney, about the FDR era in World War II, the slow poisoning of our president, and all the intrigue of that war and the geopolitics, and the cloak and dagger spy game that's been happening since the dawn of man. And don't think in our digital era of today that it's stopped one iota. It still goes on. I want to thank you so much, Stephen, for taking the time to talk to the Von Wien Show audience. And folks know where to get the book and how to contact you. And it's been a real pleasure, man, as always, to speak with you. Appreciate it.
Well, it's great to be on your show. And people, you can reach out to me. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm all over. Von knows how to get me. I'm all over the place. And I'll be talking to you soon, Von, in a couple days, I'm sure. I got some things to talk to you about. And everybody, thank you very much. You need to buy this book because the knowledge needs to be passed on. You know, it's important to know. It's important stuff. So thanks for having me on
your show. Oh, anytime. And it's a real pleasure. And I love books about history. So this is a book, folks. You got to get it. Again, one last time, whomurderedbooks.com, author Stephen Ubaney, U-B-A-N-E-Y, if you're out there writing things down. Or go and get the podcast of the show, hear it again, and send the link to your friends. We have a lot of people, I have noticed, that upload this link through the week. They're on Apple, they're on Google, and it's wonderful, and it's great information, especially during the holidays. I mean, what a great gift, right, for the Christmas holidays. Stephen, thanks again, sir. We'll be talking soon about all kinds of good, great projects. Looking forward to it.
Yes, sir. Next stop, which book do you want to do next?
Let's do Diana next.
Oh, the one I just put out. I'm having problems keeping that. I'm having problems keeping that one in stock. I really am. Yeah,
okay.
I'd love to do that. That would be fun. That would be great. Okay,
Who murdered Diana?
Thanks for having me on your show. And ladies and gentlemen, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Stephen. Stephen O'Baney, folks. Thanks so much, Stephen. We love you. Have a great night out there in New York. We'll talk to you soon, sir. Thank you.
Take care.
Stephen O'Baney is quite the paperback writer. We had a great rendition there. And get an adult beverage, take a little break, we'll finish up the show. But first, we'll hear from the paperback writer. the Beatles.
Paperback writer.
Cool, very cool. We have the paperback writer, Stephen Ubaney, fantastic author. And my God, we got a lot of things to talk about. Well, we're going to be, we're in overtime now, official overtime of the show. It's been a good one here. I'm so glad our VIP guest, Stephen Ubaney, could come on to the show and talk because he is the paperback writer. And, gosh, I mean, FDR, the whole World War II era, just amazing folks. Look, we're coming up on the holidays. It's a great, that will be a great present for you to give somebody. He has other books, Who Murdered Elvis, Who Murdered Diana. But tonight, we also give a great upcoming holiday toast to all of our friends and family, locally, at home and abroad. We will raise a glass and toast to every worker in America who also refused to bow and to kneel to the globalists and their vaccine mandates. You don't realize it yet, but folks, it is working. There's a reason why they keep pushing back these mandatory dates to take the vaccine and granting exemptions or just dropping the issue altogether. They are very scared of you, and they should be. They ordered and needed you to kneel. But you did not kneel. You did not cave in. You did not capitulate to the government bullies that are out there. And that's a fact. Now, it's also been reported, as I told you once before, but it is worth repeating, that during this holiday season, you go into a store, you see the Salvation Army. And they're, you know, ringing the bell. But this year, the Salvation Army went political. Not sure if you know about this. And they wanted white donors to the Salvation Army, of all things, to offer, get this, sincere apologies for their racism. Unbelievable. The Salvation Army is asking for more than just donations this time of year. They want you to give your cash if you're a white family and then repent and kneel and bow at the altar of political correctness in America. I guess the Salvation Army won't miss my white money going forward then. It's an organization that's run by really stupid political people, I would think, that would insult the very people who help fund and promote and support their organization. Crazy politics going on inside this country. I can't think of any other charity or any other group that's mandating that you repent for your, you know, for sins that you have not even committed in order to give them money. It's really bizarre. We are living in idiocracy, folks, in a very bizarro world. You might want to think about spending your money with a more non-political organization. It's just one of those things that is going on in this country right now that we've got to get a handle on. Well, we're also working on getting the legendary Michael Franzese on the radio show. He is an ex-mafia capo regime from one of the big mafia families in New York. From one good fellow to another, we'd love to have him on the show if he can make it. There's so much other news going on, but since we're in overtime, I want to thank you all for being here tonight. Thank you all for sharing and the calls, and there's so much more to talk about. We could go on and on, but it's the end of another fantastic, epic Von Wehhunt show. You've been listening to episode 80, one of our epic episodes here with legendary author Stephen Albany. We thank you all for being here tonight. For my mountain stronghold, I want to bid you all farewell. We will continue with the shows all during the holiday season. And don't forget, the first Tuesday in January will be the next Bachelor's Guide to the Galaxy radio show as well. Thank you all tonight. Have a wonderful evening with you and yours. Until next time, folks. Von Wehhunt is signing off. Godspeed, America.
For so long, it's a nice day to start again.